The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Hey, it's Chris Fleming. More painful than a Tyrannosaurus Rex stepping on your testicle. Listen to Dave and Mike on Odyssey Files.
Oh! Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Good evening, Para-X. You are listening to the Odyssey Files. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. With me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Dave Sawyering. Good evening, David.
Good evening, Michael. How are you on this fine, balmy evening?
Pretty flippin' terrible, actually.
Oh. But
that doesn't ruin my enthusiasm and happiness to do the show.
Well, of course not.
It's really got nothing to do with this wonderful program that everybody is about to hear.
Right. Exactly. The high point of our week right here, baby, from 7 to 8 p.m. on the radio.
Oh, how far do we have to tumble in order to peak on Monday night?
Well, yeah. It's winter. That's all I'm going to say. There just ain't much going on, man. It's cold and snow and winter, and it's just nasty outside.
Yeah. I mean, is it actually currently nasty outside or just?
No, just chilly, but it will be tomorrow. Got another storm system coming through, and we got no place to put any snow because it's already like 4 feet deep with the snow plow shoving it up to the curbs.
Yep, nope, got it. So, yay.
But that is not going to take away from tonight's show, because tonight's show, at least part of it, is going to be interesting.
Part of it, yeah. At least 15 to 20%.
I was thinking 12 to 15, but I could go to 20.
Well, as everybody knows, I'm the eternal optimist.
Exactly. Yep. So, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Right. So on Friday, I think it was, you brought to me this, I don't want to say story, because it's not.
No.
It's a factual thing that happened.
Right. It's a factual
thing. I had never heard it. So I have no idea any of the background. In fact, it wasn't even until obviously just before the show that I got the photos that you had sent.
Yep.
So you are going to have to relay what it is.
Absolutely.
That brought on the topic of this show.
Okay, absolutely. So tonight we are going to tackle something interesting, which is the crow. The reason that we're going to talk about crows, at least part of the night, is because something very interesting happened in Minneapolis last Tuesday. It was either Tuesday or Wednesday morning, early. So I got notification from a couple of different people that had kind of questions and said, they kind of approached me and said, we had this really, really odd thing on the way to work today. This really odd thing happened to us. And I said, okay, so what happened? And they said, we're heading to work, and they work right by HCMC, which is Hennepin County Memorial Clinic, I'm going to guess.
Center.
Center, there you go. As I say, it's not a clinic because it's absolutely huge. So they work basically right there, and that's right by U.S. Bank Stadium. So they, on their way to work in the morning, starting at about 5:30, the first couple people saw them, there was an extremely large group of crows. And they seemed to be gathering in the trees right outside the morgue at HCMC, the morgue building. And so, of course, with you throw in the Hollywood use of the crow in like every evil movie that we probably have ever gone to the theaters and seen. And that kind of brought the topic up. And they're like, why would there be, this huge amount of crows at the morgue? And I thought, well, that's a really good question. You know, why would there be a really huge group of crows at the morgue? The pictures at 5:30 probably show somewhere in the neighborhood of, I didn't count them, but probably in the neighborhood of 400 or 500 birds. By 6:30, that number had quadrupled, and they're guesstimating that there was probably close to 2,000 crows. They were circling over the top of the stadium. They were 5-6 crows deep on the ledges of the morgue, and every single tree was overloaded with crows. So tons of noise, tons of racket. People were scared. They weren't sure what was going on. They thought maybe they were going to get attacked if they walked near the trees or walked anywhere near the, this group was so big. So the idea got presented to me. Did I think that there was some type of evil that was happening at HCMC? That was kind of the topic.
They were circling US Bank Stadium.
Yes.
So obviously there has something, as a Packer fan, they are obviously there in support of their Minnesota Vikings.
the pathway to the dead, so to speak. Are you saying that the Vikings team is dead for the next season? Is that the implication there, Mike?
It's already done.
Yeah. The curse has already been set. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers released 2,000 crows and one homing pigeon and said, go to US Bank Stadium.
How hilarious would that be?
That would be pretty hilarious.
If next, somewhere on Facebook, there is a meme of Aaron Rodgers summoning
crows,
5,000 crows to go over to the Minnesota Vikings stadium.
Exactly. Yeah. And just decimate the glass panels with poop in the dead of winter.
I didn't even go there, but that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of poop.
That'd be a lot of poop. 5,000 birds. So anyway, it got presented to me, right? Do I think that anything is like happening? And I said, more than likely not. I said, first of all, it's the morgue. It's not like it's the birth center. I said, and secondly, I said, if anything was happening, it would be more like somebody passed away that carried a lot of power or a lot of energy, and that the crows might be there to kind of make sure that they get a safe passage. That they, the crows are kind of like the harbinger of death, but they also have always been kind of known in folklore to be the bird that kind of takes you to the other side. So basically they take your soul and take you on the flight to wherever you're going. And so that popped into my head, and I said, that would make more sense that somebody passed away that had an extreme amount of like energy, whether it be positive or negative is irrelevant, but somebody who was very important, very powerful, very strong. I said, and there might be that could be a slight chance that something like that happened, and it drew the crows in because they sensed the energy that was there. So they're acting as a protection type of thing. They're there to make sure that there's safe passage wherever this person of importance is going next. So it got me interested, so for the past week, I've been digging and I can shoot my own theory in the foot because I found some very interesting articles that have been tracking what they call the mega murder of crows in Minneapolis for the last decade or so. They actually have their own Facebook page. And I guess there's this group of crows And I'm assuming that this was also that group, and they just happened to maybe park on the morgue for whatever reason, is somewhere in the neighborhood. Let me find it so I'm not at 2,500 birds, up to what some people have guessed up to 5,000. So you can imagine if you were walking down the street headed to work and you saw 2,000 crows hanging out on the morgue and then every other tree was completely packed, that would certainly get your attention and cause your brain to start kind of trying to figure out what's going on. One of the other things that I saw is that according to the Cornell Lab, crows congregate in groups ranging from a few hundred, now this is throughout the world, up to groups of 2 million each winter. So in perspective, 5,000's, 2,500 is kind of a small group compared to 2 million.
It's a close-knit family.
It is.
Of 5,000.
Well, sure.
That's like the Anderson family of crows.
Right, that's the Minnesota family. Yeah, the Andersons, yeah.
Yep. The chapter. That's the Minnesota chapter.
That's the Minnesota chapter of crows, yeah. Yeah, because some of them 2 million crows, like, they're probably nowhere near cold weather. They're probably someplace where it's real nice and warm, a lot of roadkill, a lot of stinky gut piles on the side of the road to eat, you know, and all that fun stuff. The other thing, and obviously if you know anything about crows, you know they're extremely intelligent birds. This study from Cornell also said that they've tracked birds that have returned to the same roost for more than 100 years.
Like
not the same bird. I don't think they, yeah. I mean, generations, like, I'm assuming it's generations of birds. Oh, it is. Yeah. Sorry. Generations of crows that have returned to the same roost for more than 100 years. So that's interesting too. I guess our group is in Loring Park. That's kind of their major hangout. So,
how far away is that from U.S. Bank Stadium and HCMC?
Well, as the crow flies, probably about 10. I had to throw that in there. Probably
you did.
Probably about 10 minutes. So, I mean, I think it's reasonable that they were taking a break because of the storm, because that was the morning that we got that really bad kind of blizzard type snowstorm that popped in about 8 o'clock. So that was before the storm got bad, but that was the morning of the storm. So they might've been a little off key as to where they were.
Well, I mean, cause we all know that animals, you know, are sensitive to energies.
Right.
And weather and what happens in the environment, energy wise. So I'm wondering if maybe there was some sort of shift or something that told them to move over
to show up at that location, that particular spot.
Yeah. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, the big buildings, you know, saved them from the wind, you know, but,
right. Yeah. In the trees, maybe. I mean, but they were sitting on the ledge. I mean, they were stacked on the roof of the morgue. So unless they had steam vents up there or something like that, I don't know. I have never been in HCMC morgue and I really don't have any ambition to go.
I don't know. I'd like to investigate it.
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of like dozens of dead bodies in plastic bags with toe tags.
Well, I'm not saying that it needed to be like active.
Well, you mean like if they cleared it out kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going with like 2 dozen bodies laying around with toe tags though. I've seen way too many zombie movies. I'd be totally wigged out. I wouldn't even be a good investigator. Cause you know, God forbid, you know, that when a human body passes, you know, things all of a sudden, you know, you'll get a nervous twitch 2 days after you're dead or hours after you're dead, or you know, you'll release gas and you'll belch or something. That's the last thing I would need, man. Somebody's arm comes jerking off the table. I would run right through a steel door. And I don't run. But I would be moving quickly. I would be moving quickly if I saw that happen.
That would be. I'm sorry, that would be hilarious.
Yeah, it would be afterwards after I found out that it was just an electrical twitch, but
right,
it wouldn't be funny at that exact moment in time.
or if they're in their little refrigerators or whatever it is.
Oh yeah.
And all of a sudden they have that switch. So hear this boom, like somebody's trying to get out.
Yeah, or the door, the big, those big metal handles. It just like clicks and the door kind of half opens. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I got to go take a coffee break.
I knock on it. You're like, oh.
Who is it?
You're not getting out of there.
Close it back up.
Go ahead.
I know. I was just going to say, I think your point is very legit. It could be something. It could be something that was an energy switch. It could be. It could be something. I could have been right. I mean, it could be something that somebody that had a huge amount of energy within them that was somebody very special passed away, and that energy was being released from their human body. We're never going to know, but I found it interesting that huge group of birds showed up at HCMC, and I thought, well, it's a pretty relevant topic. And it's within the last week. And then it got us looking into crows, and they're an interesting bird. They've kind of been misguided as far as how they've been portrayed, but I know that you did some looking about native stuff. Natives have kind of not have the same negative connotation about them as like we do and the English do.
No. In fact, they have the exact opposite. In fact, the couple things that I had read, the first thing that says many people are under the impression that crows are viewed as the harbinger of death in Native American cultures. And in fact, they're actually the exact opposite to pretty much all Native American tribes. They're not seen as omens of death, or evil or anything like that. They're it's actually considered in many tribes to be good luck if you see a crow. Obviously they'll eat, dead carcass and stuff like that, but so will a lot of animals.
Right.
Definitely well known about the crow's intelligence. There's a lot of folklore and whatnot about why they're black. I read a story, I think, from the Sioux about why crows are black. And I read it right before the show, and I was like, this makes absolutely no sense. It's almost comical. It really is. I can relay that if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I want to hear it because I didn't read anything on why they're the color black.
Okay, because I actually just got rid of I got rid of it. It was just like, this is too dumb. So this is a Brule, Brule.
Okay.
A Brule Sioux legend. Way back when there weren't a lot of humans on the planet, there were no guns, anything like that. So it was all spears and bow and arrows still. But they had to hunt the buffalo, otherwise they would starve. And the crow was a friend to the buffalo. And as they were able to fly and see the Indians or the natives approaching, they would go down and warn the buffalo that they were coming, and then the buffalo would herd away and they would be saved, and obviously people starved. But what was part of this story that made me laugh, I'll read it verbatim, and it says, whenever they spied hunters approaching a buffalo herd, they flew to their friends and, perching between their horns, warned them, caw, 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 cousins. Hunters are coming. They are creeping up through that gully over there. They're coming up behind that hill. Watch out. Caw, caw, caw. And what I loved about this, was that they put in, like, the sound effects of the caw, 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 and then turned into English. Like, why not just cousins? Hunters are, like, why did they have to add in before and at the end the caw, caw, caw?
I don't know.
So I was reading that, and I just started laughing. I'm like, why? Why would you have that in there? So, anyway, to continue the folklore, so the people council got together, and they needed to figure out what to do. I forgot a really, really important part of that story, and I apologize. According to this legend, crows were white.
Okay.
Completely white.
Okay.
Completely white. The crow leader, or this crow, oh, I'm sorry, the council, knew that one of the crows was huge, twice as big as the other, and that was the leader. So the chief of this tribe made the suggestion. He said, we must capture the big white crow and teach him a lesson. It's either that or go hungry. So what they did is they had a large buffalo skin, that still had the head and horns, and
camouflage, pretty much. Early Indian camouflage. Yeah.
So you're pretty much wearing a dead carcass. This right. is, Buffalo Bill, Native American style.
Right. Exactly.
So, the chief said, "Nephew, sneak among the buffalo. They will think you are one of them and you can capture the big white crow." So, disguised as a buffalo, this young man crept into the herd. The hunters came and approached, and of course, the crow. Crows flew down, and again, the whole caw, 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 cousins, the hunters are coming to kill you. Watch out for their arrows. Caw, caw, caw. And all the buffalo stampeded away, except this obviously, buffalo in disguise, or native in disguise.
It was a buffalo in disguise, dressed as a buffalo.
Yeah, it was buffalo in disguise.
That sneaky guy.
A disguised, well, I know, because that's the same thing. I was just saying a disguised buffalo. But this native disguised as a buffalo. So this shows me that the crow has, crows are not only intelligent, but they're smart asses. As well. Yeah. So here's the next line. The big white crow came gliding down, perched on the hunter's shoulders, and flapping its wings said, "Caw, caw, caw, brother, are you deaf? The hunters are close by, just over the hill. Save yourself." I just love the, "Are you deaf?
Are you deaf? What are you doing?"
But so the young brave reached out, grabbed the crow by the legs so he couldn't escape.
Yep.
So they captured him. They got the council together again and goes, "What shall we do with this big bad crow who has made us go hungry again and again?" One of the hunters, who was angry, said, "I'll burn him up." And before anybody could stop him, threw the crow into the fire.
Okay.
He was held down by rope on a stone. So naturally, the rope burned and released him, and the crow flew out of the fire, but not before it had scorched him. And, the crow pretty much said, "I'll never do it again. I'll stop warning the buffalo, and so will the Crow Nation, I promise." And from then on, not only were the crows not warning the buffalo, which allowed them to be hunted, but they have been black ever since.
Oh, nice.
Due to this crow leader, this big white crow, being thrown into the fire and scorched.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes no sense at all. But I understand why he would be scorched
and
not black.
Right.
So, yeah, that was... It makes a lot of sense if you don't think about it.
Right, exactly. And what year was that written, probably?
Oh, I have... It doesn't actually have a date.
Okay. I was going to say, because that wasn't like in the 60s. So that's probably going back, you know, 500 years.
It was told in the 60s. it told by a good white buffalo at Winter Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota in 1964. Well, that was when that was told.
That was a heck of a guess on my part, huh?
Yeah, well, that's what I was like. I was like, whoa!
Whoa.
But I think the story itself obviously came from a long, long time ago.
Right, and then was just passed down and stuff like that. So, yeah, well, it's a possibility, right? Everything's a possibility, so.
Right, so.
One in a million.
But crows, crows are also, you know, in Native American folklore and whatnot, you know, they're used as spirit animals. They're used as clan animals. In fact, almost, I guess I really can't say almost, but a lot of tribes have crow clans, like the Chippewa. They have a crow clan, and its totem are called Ondeg, A-A-N-D-E-G, the Hopi. Never heard of them before.
Yep.
I won't even attempt to pronounce what their two crow clans are called, because wow, I've never seen so many Ys.
Yeah, leave that one alone. We'll just say they have two.
Yeah, Ys and Us.
Yeah.
But the Menominee, the Caddo, the Tlingit, and the Pueblo tribes of New Mexico, they all have, like, crow clans. They're like I said, they're seen as good luck. They're seen as being almost guides. I know you mentioned before about how, like, they would take the dead to the
yep.
other side.
Yep.
And there are some, legends, folklore, whatnot, that deal with the crow that's able to fly between, both sides. So, but yeah, in Native American culture, the crow is actually not at all bad. And in fact, is exactly the opposite. So, I mean, I guess that just goes to pose the question as to how did it go from like, where was the disconnect between what Native Americans think of crows and how, you know, people believe them to be the harbingers of death, you know, in our culture.
Right. And that's a good question. And I don't have exact stats, but I know that before we saw them as being kind of, and I'll air quote the word evil, that the Europeans had a real distaste for crows. And that I think that bled into our culture. So I think it started in Europe. Yeah, that's where I think it came from. And then we, at that point, you know, we're just gullible. We're like a melting pot of people. So we don't have our own thoughts. We just take a little piece of everybody else's thoughts that shows up, and then we throw it all in the pot, and then we mix it together, and then we, hey, that might be feasible. And then, you know, some new idea comes out. I mean, that's kind of how it works, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, that's what our nation's all about, really, is, although you don't know it at times, but it's about brotherhood and, you know, acceptance of a multitude of different nationalities and different nations coming together on one, although the U.S. is big, I mean, but, you know, in one area, and then trying to, you know, learn from each other and stuff like that. That's the way it's supposed to be. I know it's not like that all the time, but ideally, that's the way it would work.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
Oh, I was going to say, I keep wanting to say definitely. I just can't bring myself to do it.
Oh, that's fine. I was speculating, so you don't got to say definitely. So I found a couple quick stats here as I was looking. So the Native Americans did herald the crow as the bringer of light and associated the bird with creation because it was thought to bring light where there was none, which I thought that was kind of – so that follows up on what you were talking about. And then in the Celtic symbolism, Samhain, which is, you know, one of our favorite holidays, was a day when the Celts – or when the Celts celebrated their new year. As part of that celebration, the goddess Morrigan presides over the celebration, bestowing those born on this date with oracle and visionary traits. Morrigan assumes the shape of a raven, which – it's, you know, ravens are bigger than crows, but they're in the same family. And the bird was viewed as a seer, not a seer, a seer, S-E-E-R, and had special visionary powers. They also, and then it goes on to say, they also believed that when someone died, that the crow would carry their soul to the land of the dead. So obviously they'd have the ability to go to the land of the dead and come back. But I think that, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's all kinds of good facts on them. You know, if you even going back into the Bible, when Noah, when they waited out the storm and Noah wanted to see what was going on, he released a crow and he said, go take a look, go fly around, take a look and let me know what everything looks like. Well, the crow took off, saw that the flood was over, and never came back to tell Noah. And so he got a bad rap for that. He did. And if you read it in the Bible and stuff like that, Noah was not very happy about the crow after that point, and so he got kind of punished and stuff like that. So he got kind of a bad rap. And then there's a, if you go back into ancient Egypt times, they had released a crow on a special mission to go and act as to gather information about this mystical place. And the crow was supposed to go check it out because the Egyptians also believed that the crow had the special ability to be a seer. And so they sent the bird. The bird happened upon a fig tree. The fig tree wasn't ripe yet. So the bird decided that he wanted to wait, wanted a fig. So he perched on the tree and waited until the figs ripened, thereby delaying his return back to the Egyptians with the information. And then the event had come and gone, and by the time he got back after he ate his figs, they were none too happy. So again, taking the rap for that one.
So what you're saying is that the crow in ancient times was untrustworthy and self-serving.
Yes, I would say so. That's what it sounds like.
when you're talking about Noah, the thing that flashed in my mind was like a Far Side
cartoon. Oh, I know. Absolutely.
just Noah just sitting there all alone on his ark. Well, yeah. I shouldn't say all alone, but I mean... sorry.
That's okay.
So, we're going to go to a quick commercial break.
Yeah.
We're going to come back.
And we have no idea what we're going to talk about for the second half of the show, so be prepared for that when you come back.
I might have something.
Okay.
But it's kind of like beating a dead horse, so I don't know if you'll want to do it or not.
Well, we're going to run with it, so.
All right. So we're going to come back here in a couple minutes. You're listening to The Odyssey Files on Para-X.
UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids.
A lot of shit on the coin. Just think if you listen to the words of Para-X.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Rat, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear...
Line!
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
This is Elizabeth Saint. You know, in my journeys, I've confronted an over 1,000-year-old demon from the depths of Shepherdstown. But then, you know what happened? I came across Mike and Dave. And hot damn, nothing could have prepared me for the Odyssey Files. My second favorite radio show. I love you guys.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we're back.
One of these days, I want you to say, and we're front. And then just pause.
No.
Yeah, and then just pause and see if anybody catches it.
What am I pausing for? We're on the air. We're on the radio.
I know, but there's people in the chat room, so I want to see if anybody catches it and goes, what? What? What was that?
Well, no, because we're on like a 7-second delay.
Oh, well, never mind.
So not only would I have to sit here and wait for 7 seconds,
no,
but I have to wait even longer for them to type it.
Yeah, no.
And if nobody types, how long am I waiting for?
Right. No. You know me. I'm Mr. No Dead Air, so there's no way in hell I'm going to wait 7 seconds. If I see you pause for 2 seconds, I'm already jumping in. So, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I would literally be like, do.
Nope, that won't work. Never mind. Throw that one out.
Okay. Done.
All right.
So,
we're changing topics.
We're changing topics. No more crows.
No more crows. Although, take a look at, you know, crows are fascinating birds. We'll leave it at that. So, you know, and why there were 2,000 of them sitting on the morgue at HCMC is anybody's guess. But it was interesting. So we thought we'd talk about it. So,
yeah, I really love the name Mega Murder.
I do too. Love that
Mega Murder of crows in Minneapolis.
I love that. Yep, love it too.
So, this past weekend. And Scott, who is in the chat room right now, was there for it. I had a case. I had an investigation. I chanced the snowstorm. And thankfully, we were already like halfway on our way home by the time we hit even one flake. But after that, it was like, you know, World War III. And thankfully, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and nobody's on the road except for, you know, a stray car. So even if I was in the middle of the road, which I don't know if I was or not until I hit the rumble strips, it made it a lot easier to get home somewhat safely, even though my average speed was still like 70, 75. I wanted to get home. I'm sorry. To say that Scott was a little apprehensive, maybe tense.
White knuckled? I'm thinking white knuckled.
I don't know. He might have been. Only he can answer that question. But he did say that he said the next day, and I'm going to have to paraphrase here. Can I remember exactly how he phrased it? It did reaffirm his belief in a higher power that...
That he made it home safely and didn't die in the Lexus.
Yes. So, or maybe it was the power of prayer. The power of prayer. That's
there it is.
Is how I pray. He reaffirmed his in the power of prayer. And I said to him, I said, well, that all depends. If you were praying that the Lord were to look out for the both of us and make sure you arrived home safely, I can understand that. If your prayer was for Mike to have the wisdom and the ability to slow down and be safe about driving, then no, that's not a reaffirmer. But it was the former.
Yeah,
so.
that you both make it home in one piece. Yep.
We'll always get home in one piece. It's just whether my car would be in one piece.
Well, a car is a material thing, so that doesn't bother me.
Right.
As long as I'm still in one piece and I'm not in a body bag with a toe tag, I'm good.
I will always get your physical body home safely.
I appreciate it.
Whether your mind is still intact, that is a different story.
I've got enough road miles with you now. I don't really get uptight about it anymore. So
I know.
I've grabbed the wheel dozens of times and put it back on the road, so it's okay.
That's what rumble strips are for.
I agree.
Okay.
Yes.
They're to let you know that you were about to go off the road. So anyway, we had a case and it did not turn out the way I was expecting it to. There was a lot of massive amounts of energy being used. I mean, this case involved three different people, like, literally being dragged and thrown across rooms. So we got there, and I'm not going to go into a lot of details. There's a very specific purpose to me bringing this up. Besides like some K2 hits and whatnot that were just on mine, but like nobody else's, no idea. We really didn't experience anything. In fact, I was like perfectly calm and comfortable in this location. But I told the clients they could not be part of the investigation until the spirit box session, which I always do at the end of every investigation. Because at that point in time, I don't care. You know, the spirit box makes all the noise in the world, so audio contamination doesn't apply. And if they want to ask questions and sometimes, you know, I need them to hear the answers.
Right.
You know, so, one of the things that they had told me, just before the investigation, we were there during the walkthrough. So right before we started, they told me that a friend of theirs, unbeknownst to them while they were sleeping, had come in and used a Ouija board. In their house, there was already activity going on.
Okay, so I just got to interject here. So, a friend broke into their house while they were sleeping, and then used a Ouija board to try and make communication with something that was they thought was already in the house.
I don't think break in is a proper term. I think it's just one of those friends' houses that.
They don't lock the doors, kind of?
The door is unlocked. Come on in.
Whenever you want. You know. So 3 a.m. Yeah. So acceptable, too?
Probably.
Okay.
All the clients are young.
Okay.
Under 25.
Okay.
All of them.
Like a communal house, then, type of thing.
Well, yeah. I guess you could probably call it. I don't know how accurate that is, but in this instance, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone was asleep, and this friend came in and used a Ouija board and naturally did not close the door.
Of course. Why would you do that?
I know. I'm just saying.
Right.
So that obviously got the wheels turning and whatnot. So anyway, so during the spirit box session, I had them all in the room where I'm trying to get confirmation of the deal that I wanted to make with the spirits in the living. They had questions of their own, but one of the questions that one of the tenants asked was, "Are you paraphrasing again? Are you upset about the other games we played?" And that immediately got my attention. I was like, what other games? this is new information to me at the end of the investigation. And supposedly they had started playing something I had never heard of. And I had mentioned it to Dave during the break, and he has never heard of it. But a game that is called Dead Man's Hide and Seek. Never heard of it before. And I'd be interested if anybody has, because if you've been around for, you know, in the paranormal for 40 and you've never heard of it before,
nope.
I don't know where this came from.
My guess is it's something new, like with the new generation.
Like, yeah. I'm going to try and remember exactly how we phrase. I don't know what you're supposed to say. But you're supposed to take a stuffed animal and take out all of the stuffing and put rice back into it. And then each person who is going to be involved in the game has to put a piece of their DNA into this stuffed animal. And then you have to go into, almost like Bloody Mary, go into like a darkened room with like a, and look into a mirror and say something along the lines of like, it's your turn, or you're it, or something along those lines. But obviously this was during an investigation, during a spirit box session. We couldn't just sit down and be like, okay, let me go into detail. So that's about all I have. I don't even understand the purpose of the game, and I think you're looking it up right now.
I am. See, and I've never heard it before. But when I typed in Dead Man's and I got to H, right, for the hide and seek, it Google searched it. It came right up. So obviously, it's been around for a while. There's all. It's going back here to 2014, right off the top of my head, as I can see. I'm going to go to Creepypasta. You ever been there or not? But it's...
No, never heard of that either.
It's the Paranormal Wiki is what it is. It's actually pretty good. They got some decent stuff in there. So
never heard of it. Wow.
Yeah, so I'll just throw this out there real quick so that we're all on the same page. So in here they refer to it as the One Man or Dead Man, it says. Hide and seek is a ritual for contacting the dead. The spirits, which are wandering restless on the earth, are always looking for bodies to possess. In this ritual, you will summon such a spirit by offering it a doll instead of a human body. And then it says, what you'll need here is one stuffed doll. It must have limbs, rice enough to stuff the doll full, one needle and one crimson thread, one pair of nail clippers, one sharp-edged tool such as a knife, a cup of salt water, natural salt works best, a bathroom with a bathtub and some form of counter, and a hiding place, preferably a room purified by incense. There must be a TV in there. Do you want me to go on kind of talking about it or no? Or do you want to go back?
I just want to know what the purpose is. Or is that to get a spirit into a doll?
Well, I think it's kind of to get a spirit in the doll, because right here it's saying to clip off your fingernail and put it inside the doll. So there's your DNA, right?
Yep.
So what up with the crimson thread? But in this particular one, it says go to the bathroom and fill your bathtub with water. Return to your hiding place and put the cup of salt water on the ground. Give a name to your doll. The name could be any but your own. Do it at 3 a.m. Okay, when the time is 3 a.m., say your name is the first it. So Mike is the first it. To the doll three times. Go to the bathroom and put the doll in the water-filled bathtub. Turn off all the lights in the house. Go back to your hiding place and switch on the TV. After counting to 10 with your eyes closed, return to the bathroom with the edge tool in your hand. Go to the bathtub and say to the doll, I have found you and the doll's name. Stab the doll with the knife. Say, you are next it, the doll's name. As you take the doll out of the bathtub and leave it on the counter in the bathroom, as soon as you put the doll down, run back to your hiding place and hide. And then it goes on to finish. Pour half the cup of salt water into your mouth. Do not drink it. Just keep it there. Get out of your hiding place and start looking for the doll. The doll will not necessarily be in the bathroom. Whatever happens, do not spit out the salt water. When you find the doll, pour the rest of the salt water in the cup over it, then spit out the salt water in your mouth onto it as well. Say, I win three times. This is supposed to end the ritual. It says, after you do this, make sure to dry the doll thoroughly, burn it, and discard the remains. So whoever would want to do this, I don't really understand. It sounds to me, you know how I feel about Ouija boards. So this sounds to me like this is a step up from Ouija boards. And to say this is idiotic to do would be an understatement coming out of my mouth. I mean, this for me, if we were on the air right now, there'd be about 14 F-bombs as I was reading this.
I know.
And you know there would be, too. I mean, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. So go ahead. So now we all are kind of on the same page as this doll game thing.
Right.
Don't do it.
So,
yeah.
No. And I didn't know any of those extra details.
Yeah, that's okay. I didn't know anything about it, so.
But my question now is, who comes up with this?
I'm going to guess somebody that is looking to conjure something would be my guess. I mean, because you're putting your own DNA in there. And then the salt water obviously would be for protection against whatever shows up inside the doll.
So these clients of mine who had played this game also they must not have taken it very seriously because they forgot about it and never finished it.
Oh, well, there you go.
So they had just found it a few days prior to us, the stuffed animal that they had used.
Yep.
They had found it a few days prior, realized that they had never finished it, but didn't do anything. They actually went and brought it out and handed it to me.
Yay.
Which is fine. I don't really care. My DNA is not in it.
Right.
They hadn't finished it. And so the new deal here was if they finished the okay. In order to properly make people understand how pissed off I was at this time, my exact question to the spirits is if the client, I use their names,
right,
but if the clients will stop being morons, will you stop attacking them? Not my most professional moment, but I think it was justifiable. But
did you get a response to that, I'm wondering?
I don't know.
Got to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, we still have to listen to it. I didn't really. It wasn't clear.
Okay.
Although Scott does believe he did hear a few affirmatives.
Okay.
But they were quick and low, and I was holding the box, so you know as well as right. I do, somebody sitting 5 feet away is going to hear it a lot better than the person who's got it like aimed right at their face.
Right. Exactly.
So
I'm curious that they were getting tossed around prior to this, though, right? Prior to playing this game, or were they getting? Did they do this thing with the stuffed animal, and then not finish it, and then get thrown around? That's what happened. That order. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That was. It all happened because by the time I got contacted with this and the investigation, 1 week had gone by.
Okay.
And when they first, contacted me, that was not part of the claims.
Right.
So then, on Thursday night, I contacted them because I said, keep me apprised if anything happens between now and when we do the investigation. I never heard from them. I'm like, sweet. Hopefully nothing has happened.
Right.
I was wrong.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah.
And so they're like, so I got an email like Friday morning, or I read it Friday morning, I should say, about all of this new you know, the female of the house got dragged down the steps into the cellar. One person got pushed into a room. The other one went in to, third one went in to check on the guy that just got pushed, and then he got thrown onto the bed. And I'm like, that's an astronomical amount of energy.
Yes.
To do.
Yes.
So it was crazy, but
if they invited something in like that, right? I mean, because that's kind of what they did. That's kind of a conjuring. To me, it's kind of a conjuring spell, really.
Probably.
But I mean, you're offering your DNA. You're doing specific ritualistic type of things. I mean, that's, you know, you've got the knife. You stab the damn thing. I mean, it's ritualistic as hell to me.
Well, right, but to a bunch of youngsters, when it's called a game,
right?
To them, it's a game,
right?
And so the reason I bring this up is I know people are, oh, Ouija board, let's stay away from them. Yes, stay away from them. If it involves the dead, stay away from it.
Well, don't play. Right. If you look at something like this, okay, and you can even remotely say to yourself, this looks kind of ritualistic. Or why do I have to put my DNA inside of the doll? Right? That right there should make you pause for a second. And if it doesn't, well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, hopefully your common sense would tell you not to put your DNA into something that you're going to try and conjure up, something that you don't know what it is or understand what it is. So right. It's witchcraft. It's ritualistic. It's possibly Satanism. I mean, who knows what it is?
Right.
I mean, but it ain't good. So
no. Well, apparently in this case, especially.
Right.
And I don't know if they necessarily invited anything new in or just severely pissed off what was already there.
Possibility
too. And I would too. I would be effing like just irate if I were a spirit or whatnot that all of a sudden the living people in the house are messing with stuff they shouldn't be.
Right.
I'm actually waiting for an email right now from them to see if anything has happened since the investigation. Everything got over the course of the investigation. Cause I know Scott, who has abilities, was very, very anxious starting the investigation. And by halfway through, it was like the calmest place you could ever be. It was just quiet and comfortable, even for him. So, I mean, we never obviously got attacked. Right. I don't know yet because I haven't been able to get to the evidence yet. If we got any responses, I do think we're going to have a lot of EVPs.
I would think so. I think you're going to get a lot of like angry, like you said, angry or upset EVPs from an entity that was there that was maybe just reaching out trying to make contact, like a normal entity, right? And then was like, wait a minute, who said it's okay to open up the portal to hell and start bringing in negative entities or whatever, right? And it's probably the good entity that started throwing people around like they were idiots.
Yeah, I definitely think that there was some revenge and punishment in that.
I think so.
I will have to see exactly what goes on. But yeah, just the whole reason for telling this story is there's a lot of different ways for people to talk to conjure stuff and people are coming up with new ways all the time.
Right.
But seriously, and I never thought that I would ever have to say this, please stick to Tide Pods. They're safer.
Yeah, they are safer.
Eating Tide Pods is safer than...
Right. Go back to beer pong. It. Yeah, go back to beer pong. Beer pong's fun. You know, stay away from trying to conjure stuff. Yes.
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 Very much so. Okay, well, that does it for us here on The Odyssey Files on Parex. We'll be back next week with another wonderful show. Everybody have yourselves a good week, especially if you don't live in the Midwest.